brought to you in high infidelity. It's the first ever Totally Football show. Hope you like our new direction, both of you. Today, what holds up worse than a summer tan are pre-season predictions. We'll be seeing who's appealing and who's already looking flaky in the Premier League. Chelsea, can they aim as high as their keeper did on Sunday? Mourinho, will he remain Manchester's biggest moaner since Moz? And Spurs, will they show the value of continuity and not recklessly changing lineups suddenly in the summer? There's Europe. We look at PSG. Like Rangers, they have Neymar money, and they're so getting Barcelona in the Champions League draw. Plus, your thoughts and questions as we round up the surprises, the surmises, the prizes, and the early goodbyes in this first Totally Football show. Then the podcast break up, and every day I wake up, somebody got something to say. Here's Barry Collins. A cucumber sideways. Seems AC Jimbo's Bosman out of the Guardian Football Weekly and set up the Totally Show. Football and Music says they'll regret it. It'll be like when they broke away and formed that new Premier League thing. Who remembers that now, eh? Michael Burgess tweets a picture of Des Lynam, Ali and Tell, and they're doing ITV's The Premiership Show with the message, never forget. So basically we're here in the tactics truck in a very real sense. And in it, first of all, hi, Kelly Cates.
Hi, James Richardson.
So special to have you here.
So special to be here. I'm honoured.
The appropriately swashbuckling James Horncastle is with us.
Hello, Jimbo.
The Nasser Al Khelaifi of podcasting, Ian McIntosh.
Good morning.
That's kind of a, if you know, you know.
Yeah.
And sacre bleu.
Oh.
Julien Laurent.
Hello, bonjour.
Bonjour to you. We'd love you to get in touch, listener. And in that regard, Ian, how do they do that, the listener?
Well, they can follow us on the Totally Show. They can subscribe to us on iTunes.
And do we have a website thing?
We have a website coming very, very soon. It will almost certainly be thetotallyfootballshow.com.
All right.
It'll be up imminently.
But in the meantime, tweet us at The Totally Show. Jim says, what's Ian McIntosh got against Penguins?
I have nothing but love for Penguins.
Okay.
Someone who loves Penguins has something against me, apparently.
All right, then. Because you said that Chelsea would finish outside the top four.
Yeah, I think they'll finish fifth.
All right, we'll talk more about why very, very shortly. Quick question, though, just to begin us. What are you most looking forward to about this season? Kelly?
The fact that the attention's going back to the players. I think there have been some big signings this summer. And last season, it was all Galacta coaches. And it was all about the big-name managers. And I think they're under pressure now. But I think we're going to talk more about the players than the managers, which is nice. It's how it should be.
James?
I think this is going to be the most difficult...
Are you looking forward to this season at all?
Are you here? Yeah. No, I think this is going to be the most difficult year that Antonio Conte has had, as he says.
Yeah. Right. Okay, and you're looking forward to seeing that. Julien, what are you most excited about? It's called PSG, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you keep it English...
No, you don't have to. Anything about this football
PSG,
season?
Yeah, PSG, of course, Neymar. You don't know how excited I am, how my house has been excited for the last 10 days. My kids, it's incredible. In England, though, the battle of the strikers, I think, is going to be fascinating. Like Kelly said, new players like Alvaro Morata, like Alexandre Lacazette, for example, if you... look at Lukaku as well, moving to United. And I think all those strikers are going to fight for who's going to finish top scorer, Harry Kane.
It's a bold prediction, Julien.
No,
right off the car.
You asked me what I was looking forward to. And I think the battle of strikers is great.
I think so too. Ian?
Everton.
Okay.
It's either going to go really, really well or really, really badly.
Right. Okay. Now, some people have said...
this podcast.
Some people have said, please don't be like other podcasts and just talk about the top six. But we kind of got to start with
them. We're going to bend the knee. Is that what we're going to do?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But first, this. Yeah, titled Tips. And I wonder now if the question's been rendered moot by events on Sunday... as we beheld the power of this armed and fully operational Arsenal, which beat Chelsea on penalties in the Community Shield. Julien, you were there.
I was indeed, and I thought it was a very, very interesting game. Far more interesting than I thought it would be initially, especially when I saw the Arsenal team with Wenger purposely resting some players, not really fielding his strongest team. And on the other side, Conte fielding his strongest team. If you just add Eden Hazard and probably Morata for Batshuayi, maybe Bakayoko for Fabregas. That's their strongest team. And I thought, Arsenal did really well. I thought Chelsea didn't do that well at all. There was a lot of things that they were doing in the first half, like trying to play from the back on goal kicks, which never worked. And they kept doing and they kept losing the ball really high on the pitch. And Arsenal kept putting pressure. And I thought it was very unlike Chelsea that game. And I thought it was very interesting.
Good. Well, it's already a trophy for Arsene Wenger, who's still there. Do Arsenal supporters have more reason to be positive now than they did last season?
Yeah, no, I think so. You know, the funny thing with Arsene is when he wins like that, even if it's a symbolic trophy, let's be honest, it's not. But he left the stadium in the mix zone and he walked like if he was the coolest guy ever. Like, you know, like if he just won everything possible to be won. He was so cool and so, yeah, you know, we won. We'll beat them again. And it was just so cool. So I hope that can transmit to the players and that they will have a good start, because the Emirates will get toxic if they don't start well. You know that for sure. Mm. Because there's still, I think, a lot of fans who are clearly not convinced that he's still the right man for the job. So if he doesn't start well, it will get toxic.
Right.
But that was a very good start, because I thought, you know, they played well. The three at the back, it's clearly getting better and better. And I think Lacazette, Kolasinac look good for the new signings.
They have had problems with their opening game of the season repeatedly. Mm. In recent campaigns, Leicester visiting this Friday evening. Kolasinac, who actually bought him?
Kolasinac.
Kolasinac, who actually bought him?
It's Serbian.
Okay.
Sorry.
Go on,
I thought
Kelly.
You were going to ask me something. No, that's all I can offer.
All
I'm
right.
Sorry.
Well, it's something.
Smart arsery, that's what I'm here for.
I like him. He looks like exactly the kind of bastard Arsenal need. Mm. He was playing as if, yeah, that thing where you're a fan, you've won a competition to get 5 minutes at the end, but he seems to do that on a professional level, just driving and surging and getting in there. And it lifts the crowd, it lifts the players, and it's something that Arsenal haven't really had. But then if you look at the last two games against Chelsea, both at Wembley, the attitude's been superb. Mm. Very un-Arsenal-like. It's kind of disturbing on a
They've
number
won
of
the
levels.
Last nine games at Wembley, Arsenal have.
Really?
Yeah. How much more can we expect from Lacazette, Julien?
That's the thing. I saw him on Thursday, so it's the Thursday before the Community Shield, and very early he spoke about the pressure, which I thought was a bit odd, because even if you feel it, just don't admit it, you know, in an interview that then we'll go live on television in front of millions of people, everything. But I thought he was brave in a way, maybe to admit that he was feeling the pressure of the transfer fee. He was feeling the pressure of everything being so bigger than anything he's known before. So he was saying, like, you know, we went on tour to Australia and China. I'd never done a tour like this before. He had a club there, Arsenal, on the Thursday where you do all sorts of things with sponsors and you see the fans. Said that, you know, I didn't know what club there was before. We didn't do that at Lyon. So for him to admit that everything is such a big change, everything is, you know, even from finding a house is like, wow, you know, finding a house in London with all those prices is crazy.
Don't they have people who do that for them?
No, not for, I mean, he was...
Well, club liaison officers and people,
yeah,
they usually have a whole department who'll find them somewhere to go, put their kids in school and...
Yes, I think they're helping
their light
a lot.
Bulbs.
Yeah, no, but they're helping a lot. But it was more the extent of the change that he was really, like, a bit overwhelmed with. And I thought, okay, well, it's either going to go very well on Sunday or that pressure... He will crumble under that pressure.
And did you see him?
I thought he did well. No, I thought he did well. It's always the same thing. If you expect him to always run in behind, which is clearly what at some point he will have to do because that's how Ozil plays a lot and everything, that's not going to work. But if you allow him to drop a bit deeper like he did on that chance he had, for example, when he hit the post, because he's at the start of the move and at the end of the move, his link-up was good, I thought, then it's going to work. But he will still have to adapt. But he's feeling better and better day after day. And he was quite happy after the game when I saw him. Wenger was quite happy with him. The other players were happy with him. So he looks good. He needs a goal now.
Surely
obviously.
Within a few weeks, though, he'll fully acclimatise at Arsenal and realise there's no pressure and it's the most comfortable job a footballer can have. No?
What about Alexis Sanchez and his bout of flu?
Well, I mean, this is the other thing, that while it was positive for them to go their last two games, they've won two trophies. You know, we've still got less than 3 weeks in the transfer window. And by all accounts, Alexis would like to be joining Manchester City and following the kind of well-trodden path that many Arsenal players go down. And they could lose him. They could lose Mesut Ozil. They've got, I mean, you look at the squad as well. It's flawed in some respects. I mean, you look at Petr Cech. Okay, Cech will play this season, but Szczesny's just gone to Juventus, so he's got no heir. Koscielny's 31. Cazorla, what's going on there? So there are issues still with that Arsenal squad, which make you believe that it's kind of the first time, really, in Wenger's time at the club where they're not just going to struggle to compete for the title, but they are going to struggle to get back into the top four. So, yeah, I think... And Ian's excitement about Everton. I mean, I don't know if Everton can break into that top four, but can they finish above Arsenal? I don't know. We'll have to see.
We'll have to see. What about Chelsea? Is there much we can say about them with big moves surely still to come? And here's a question indeed from Joe at Rocket Man. What are Conte's prospects of staying until Christmas, given that the last two managers to win the league with them both were sacked midway through the next campaign?
Well, I mean, with the exception of when Jose Mourinho came third, I think every manager who's failed to win the league at Chelsea has been sacked within a couple of months afterwards at the very longest. But I think it's a little bit early for talk like that. And there are, you know, 3 weeks left of the transfer window and you'd presume still some money to play with in there. It's a funny one because the replacements they've brought in for players have gone out are good ones. Morata's a good striker. Bakayoko's a good midfielder. Rudiger's a good defender. That's all good.
But they needed depth, Ian.
They've lost many people. And it's all players that you would have thought... All right, maybe wouldn't be first picks, but could have been blooded now. Could
He's
have come in and provided
Matic,
a bit of depth.
He?
Sorry?
He's not happy about Matic going Conte.
Doesn't seem to be, and no. I'm not surprised because, no. you know, all right, Matic was a sad ghost in Mourinho's post-title season, but Mourinho does know how to use him. He's going to free up Herrera and Pogba. More on that later. But I'm just staggered. The list of names of players who have left in the background that you thought could have started getting games like Bertrand Traore, Nathaniel Shalabar, Dominic Solanke, they lost to Liverpool. Tammy Abraham gone out on loan to Swansea. Ruben Loftus-Cheek at Crystal Palace. Kurt Zouma on loan to Stoke. You would have thought those players are capable of playing Premier League football.
Tammy Abraham will be at Swansea.
I would have thought they need four or five more bodies before they're even fit to challenge for top four, let alone both that and Europe.
Roman Abramovich is already involved in one high-profile divorce.
I was just going to ask.
I mean, he's not going to get involved
what
in
impact,
one,
you know, we saw at Monaco where Rybolovlev had to pay out what I think was the biggest ever divorce settlement and how much that coincided with Monaco reining in their free spending ways.
Why you are such gossips. My God.
Don't tell me you didn't click on this story.
I had no idea.
Really?
Genuinely had no idea. Okay. Yeah.
Why can't that man find love? What's wrong with him?
Also, what's interesting with Chelsea is that they're clearly struggling to buy the players they want. And it's not just now. It's also back in January and last summer as well, where clearly the number one target, number two target just didn't arrive and they had to go even lower than that. In January, someone like Llorente, for example, you know, never came. And again, this summer, they got Rudiger, but he wasn't their first choice. I think Bakayoko was, in fairness, this one. But was Morata really... You know, or Lukaku was the first choice. And so is there a problem because they don't want to pay as much as the others? Or, you know, is the transfer fee an issue? Are they doing things differently? But I think it's a worry, surely, for them not to be
and
able
also,
to.
And also Conte has form for walking away if things don't go his way. So, that you know, it might well be that he sort of lays his cards on the table and says, if it doesn't go my way, I'm happy just to leave you in the lurch.
Yeah, I thought it was very telling when...
I don't think it's likely contract. To happen... tomorrow, but you know,
you're calling it, Kelly. When
October the 21st. There you go.
I thought it was very telling when he signed a new contract that it was not an extension; it was for more money. Yeah. It was just until 2019.
Interesting opening fixture for them away at Burnley, who were always a tough place to go to, and now they're all stoked up as well, aren't they?
They've been buying players from Stoke.
But they also have Spurs, Everton, Arsenal, and City in the first seven games.
Who do?
Chelsea.
Oh,
so it's not just Burnley away the first game, but after that you play already Spurs, Everton, Arsenal, and City in your first six following games.
Yeah, a run that takes them to October the 21st.
Exactly. I think Kelly should put some money down because you know, you never know if they start poorly.
Could the title be heading back to Manchester? And if so, might it be to Old Trafford, Kelly? Big game for United this evening, Tuesday evening, in Macedonia as they take on Real Madrid in the European Super Cup. Mm-hmm. But given that we don't know what's happening in that, what do you make of Mourinho's very public flirting with Gareth Bale?
Well, Mourinho never talks about other players' clubs, does he? No. Mourinho never talks about other clubs' players.
Yeah.
Is a better way of putting that. But yeah, he's been talking about Gareth Bale and he said that... Oh, we'd be very interested. We fight for Gareth Bale if Real Madrid were to sell him, which is, I mean, I don't know how serious.
That'd be a great way of settling transfer disputes.
But I don't know how serious his interest is or how serious the suggestion is that Gareth Bale is going to leave Real Madrid.
Right.
You know, why would you leave Real Madrid at the moment? He has, what, three Champions League winning medals from Real Madrid. Why would you be looking to move elsewhere? What's the next challenge?
I'm the wrong person to ask at this
point. No, I don't see what. But even without Gareth Bale, I think Manchester United have got a really, really, really good chance of winning the title. They had the second best defence in the league last time round. They've improved it this time round. They've added Lukaku as a striker who's got all that energy, all that strength up front. They brought Matic in, as Ian was saying earlier. Mm. Mourinho knows exactly how to use him, even if he hasn't quite worked perfectly in the past. I just think the more I didn't think they could. And then the more I talk about it as we get closer and closer to the season, the more I struggle to see a weak link there, really.
Right. Plus, it's Mourinho's second season.
And he's always good in the second season. Right. I do wonder about Mourinho, though, because if he doesn't win the title this season, then what? Because already his reputation is, the little bit of the luster is off it. People are starting to question him. If he doesn't win, or at least strongly challenge for the title this time round, can he get back that aura? Because that's part of what helps him to galvanise a dressing room and helps him to reach those levels of success. And if he doesn't have that, that missing piece, then what? But anyway, I don't think that will be relevant because I think they will strongly challenge him.
But what about Pep then, who's facing surely similar pressure across town, a massive spending spree? Last season, huge disappointment. This time around, they bought fullbacks. Is that the difference?
Yeah, I think they recognised their limitations. They should have signed fullbacks last year. It was baffling that they didn't do it, and it really left them kind of hamstrung. But Pep, to some extent, should be under more pressure than Mourinho because they had a trophyless season. Usually you could rely on Pellegrini to at least get a League Cup, something like that. So it didn't seem that there was a lot of progression there. But after watching them in pre-season, they've been devastating since they've had the fullbacks. I know they're only friendlies, but it looked at times last year with City that they were playing with 10 men because they didn't have players who fit in their natural positions. Now it looks like they're playing with 12. I was very surprised when they played Spurs and it was a more or less full-strength Spurs team and they just whooped them 3-0. And I think Kevin De Bruyne in Eden Hazard's kind of absence for the first few weeks, months of the season. I think this could be the year where De Bruyne is the player of the year. And I think people close to Pep would tell you that where he kind of was really disappointed at last, one of the many things he was disappointed by was when Gabriel Jesus signed, made an immediate impact and then got injured and they were without him. I think the idea of having Jesus and Aguero up front, and they've been trying to play them both, is frightening.
Really. Right. So. And Bernardo Silva now in that mix as well, along with a David Silva. Mm. And the front two you just mentioned, Kevin De Bruyne.
People forget about Gundogan as well.
And Gundogan too.
I think he's due to play a friendly next week.
Right. How does it work, though? How do you fit all those players into that midfield?
Well, I think what he's been doing is he's been playing De Bruyne and Silva and one of Yaya and Fernandinho behind them. And you know, we've again been seeing them playing fairly flexible, fluid formations of either three at the back or four, and it's been exciting. I mean, I think they've got the best squad depth. They've got probably the best starting 11. So now there's kind of really.
Would
no
you
excuses.
Include goalkeeper in that? Hmm? Would you include goalkeeper in that?
Central defenders.
Defenders is, I think, the weak link because I think they are still kind of hanging their hat on Kompany being fit and playing 38 games in a season. And I think, considering he's had similar injury issues to what kind of ended Owen Hargreaves' career, I think that's got to be a concern. And then the progression of John Stones, is that where they expect it to be? I still have my doubts on that.
I think, though he'll never admit it, that last season Guardiola was taken a little bit aback by British football. He made a big thing of, you know, saying, I'm not going to say it's the best league in the world, which is fair because it's probably not. And it's you know, it's not some unlockable puzzle. But I think he got taken by surprise by things like, you know, Burnley and the importance of goalkeepers and things like that. But he knows now. He's had a whole season with those players in English football. There's nothing that's going to surprise him this year. I think it is very much of a case of if Vincent Kompany stays fit, they definitely win the league. If he doesn't, I still think they probably win the league.
just because that array of attacking midfield talent is terrifying.
Also, one of the things that Pep was disappointed by last year was they created so many chances. In fact, I think there's a statistic of clear-cut chances they created, I think maybe 10, 15 more than Chelsea, the champions. But the finishing, they were profligate. And usually you'd think, I mean, most people who do their fantasy football teams put Aguero in, something like that, and yeah, he's the leading points scorer in that field. But goals from other areas, they should have scored a lot more goals.
Were the only team in the league that wasn't facing Claudio Bravo. I think that was a significant part of that. Okay, so Man City, it all depends on companies. Fitness, wow. We've also got to mention, I believe, Spurs in this picture, no? Although they're yet to make significant moves on the transfer market, and they did let Kyle Walker go. Kieran Trippier, his replacement, has now got himself injured. Chris Miller says it's so Spurs that the position we're weakest in terms of cover is the one in which we suffer an injury, much like Kane last season. Are they going to be the top four casualty?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I think there's a lot to be said for stability. It's also a lot to be said for being...
From you.
There's no need for big changes. Arguably, they were the strongest team in the Premier League last season. I mean, Chelsea basically didn't really have any injuries at all. If that situation had been different, I think the title race would have been a bit different. It doesn't help with the Walker and Trippier thing. But Kyle Walker-Peters had a very, very good summer, and he could be ready for a step up now. But they're basically one of the best teams in the league, and they've lost the one player that, if you looked at their 11, you'd go, he's probably the one who's expendable.
Wembley, though. Wembley.
Yeah, but it's...
You can write it off as much as you want, but
they won there on Saturday, though.
Yeah.
They beat Juventus. Well, so you were there, weren't you?
They played really well.
And maybe they've changed the size of their training pitch. I don't know.
Well, that's it then, isn't it?
No, but if they've been playing and practising on that, yeah, then maybe that'll make a difference.
Perhaps so. Yeah. What did you make of them against Juve, James?
Yeah, they looked ready. They should have scored more goals than the two. I thought what was particularly surprising was some players who people have already written off, like Moussa Sissoko. Sissoko completely dominated against Stefan Lichtsteiner. And I think, yeah, as we saw last year, there were players like Son, for example, first year was not considered a bust, but hadn't made the impact that people expected. He then had a good year last year. And maybe it will be the same with players like Janssen and Sissoko this year. I don't know. I mean, I think with Sissoko, they were looking to maybe put him out on loan somewhere. But I think those players who didn't give Spurs depth last year might give them depth this year because of having that year of experience in the Premier League and that year of working under Pochettino.
And there'll surely be a bunch of late signings from Daniel Levy. Who do you think you might be coming in, Julian?
I don't know, but it's not because you were the strongest team last season that you can't improve it. You know, and that's the problem I have. Pochettino can talk about, you know, the great young players he have, which is true, and that, you know, he wants to improve them, which will improve the team. It still doesn't mean that you can't bring someone from another club that will improve the squad or the team as well. And I find it baffling, I have to say, that they haven't signed anyone and that they didn't have a plan already ready for when Kyle Walker was going to go, because they knew he was going to go, and that they didn't have one or two names that they could bring in as a cover for Trippier when the Walker deal was through. And I don't know, I find it weird. And I do wonder if there's maybe an issue between Daniel Levy, you know, who's a very shrewd businessman when he does all the transfer dealings, and Mauricio Pochettino, who surely would, you know, would want one or two additions maybe, and that they just, I don't know.
Pochettino is his own worst enemy in this case, because, yeah, he's shown himself able to bring players through, develop what they've had in that academy, which Daniel Levy is very big on, kind of the amount of money they've invested in it and how well those players have come into the team and performed for Spurs. So in some respects, you could say that's their... Yeah, Kyle Walker-Peters, players like that, are their new signings, so to speak.
You talk about Abramovich at Chelsea and having the divorce, and, you know, that coincided with the Monaco president, you know, pulling back, you know, tightening the reins there. You look at Spurs, they finish third, then second, then suddenly they have to invest in their squad, but at the same time they're moving to a new stadium. They've got all this investment going on elsewhere in the football club, and it just seems like the timing for them is...
Who's getting divorced?
Nobody at Spurs, but they have a different financial outlay.
Oh, right.
God almighty, don't make me say that people are getting divorced. I'm not announcing divorces.
Right, okay.
Everybody's fine, James. We're all fine.
How are they at Liverpool, Kelly, with your, you know, particularly...
No divorce.
No divorces. No, but how is the mood there? Is the pressure mounting on Jurgen Klopp? Is there a demand for his unique brand, his unique approach to pay off this season?
I think from reading what Liverpool fans have been saying, I think the criticism has been of how the deals that Jurgen Klopp wants have been handled. So I think with the whole Virgil van Dijk, and you can say as much as you like with Virgil van Dijk, everybody taps everybody up. Well, not everybody has to come out and make a public apology because it's gone so badly wrong. And a lot of that might come down to the fact that Southampton feel that they can't publicly sell another player to Liverpool without seriously upsetting their fans. So I don't know. Van Dijk's now come out and made this whole statement. If they get him in, it makes a big difference because they could really do with that cover. Salah could be brilliant. Looks good in pre-season.
Right. James, tell us about Salah.
Well, I think he's exceptional. I mean, the idea that just because it didn't work out for him at Chelsea, it won't work out for him at Liverpool, I think is erroneous, because you look at who else it didn't work out for at Chelsea. You know, De Bruyne, there are others, Lukaku, and they've gone on from strength to strength in this league. I think Salah is perfect for Klopp's system. Super quick, great on the counter-attack, super energetic, and has really come a long way. He never used to play with his head up. Now he does. Finds the striker all the time. And I think both him and Mane, my hamstrings are pulling just thinking about that as a defender.
I think the defence is a big issue. If Virgil van Dijk was there, I'd have no doubt about saying they'd finish in the top four. Even if it is getting to the point where it would probably be cheaper just to buy Southampton Football Club when you add up those transfer fees. I'm not sure they're exactly getting value in the long term. But the other problem is they concede so many goals and so many silly goals, and everybody else has got much better, with the exception of Tottenham, who are already much better. I think they'll finish sixth, and I think that's kind of where they should finish. That's going to be Jurgen Klopp getting the most out of them.
Sixth. If Coutinho goes or if Coutinho stays.
So, Julian, you're saying Coutinho will go?
Yeah, I think so. Whether that's PSG or Barcelona.
PSG?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's an interesting question there about, because they're right, as I understood it, at the limits of any kind of financial fair play envelope with what they've done for Neymar. How would they then bring in Coutinho on top of that?
Oh, no. They said they still have money available, even for Kylian Mbappe. So
they've got players to sell.
They can, but the sales will, if they can sell as much as they want, you know, people like Jesse and Krikoviak and Matuidi and Aurier. No, not Kimpembe, no. They keep Kimpembe. No.
So they're not going to
sell. They probably
made
an offer from Inter, but they're not going to sell Kimpembe. But that they will sell for 60 or 70 million euros, but they still think they've got enough money to do Mbappe or Coutinho, which is 180 million euros, the other 100 million euros. They said they've got enough.
Wow. So I think Coutinho? Do you think he's definitely going to go, James?
I wouldn't be surprised if Coutinho stays, actually. I think now, particularly for Liverpool as well, it's really important that they're not seen to be doing a Suarez and selling that kind of caliber of player going into a season where, again, you're at that kind of phase where you think it's time Liverpool take another step forward. And this would be, I think, a step back. But it all depends on the player at the end of the day.
Yeah. Does he want to go, Kelly? Do you know? Have you spoken to Coutinho?
Yeah, I would imagine. I haven't spoken to him personally, no. But I would imagine any player would want to go to Barcelona. I think it's almost impossible to turn down if Barcelona are interested. But I don't believe he's a troublemaker. I don't think he's going to go in and kick up a fuss if it doesn't work out. I think my understanding is that he wants it to be done amicably. I don't think there's going to be any great fallout. There's not going to be a Van Dijk situation. But I think there are similarities in Van Dijk moving to Liverpool and Coutinho maybe going to Barcelona. And if you're the selling club, you have to understand if a player wants to make a step up, if they want to go and achieve something else, the next step in their career. A sideways move, I think you then have more bargaining power as a club. But I think if you're Liverpool and you've got a player going to Barcelona, you can't really, as happened with Suarez, you can't really say no. If you're Southampton, player wants to go to Liverpool or another side who finished in the top four last season, because it might just be that Southampton don't want to sell Van Dijk to Liverpool. He might end up somewhere else. That if that happens, you can't really stop a player from progressing in their own career. It doesn't sit very well with me to do that.
No, I hear what you're saying.
What I want to see, just to finish on Liverpool, is how can you play Salah, Mane, Firmino and Coutinho together, though? I really want to see, or one will have to stay on the bench, and I don't know which one would be of the of that, or you can play them four and then see what happens behind. But then the balance of your team will obviously be far difficult to find than if you play, you know, a 4-3-3 formation like they've had last season.
What,
where
Sturridge is fit.
And if Sturridge is fit, and you know, but it's interesting because
I think we're forgetting Solanke.
Solanke as well, yeah.
Yeah, although Solanke is not, you know, at the level of those four anyway, I think. So
I think he could be given a run in the team. He looks great.
I don't think we can put Solanke, all respect to Solanke, I don't know him at all, with Salah, Mane, Coutinho and...
I'm saying is, if you're Solanke and you join Liverpool, presumably you're moving from Chelsea to Liverpool in order because you think you're going to get more game time.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah.
But let's sort out how they play the four big ones.
Starting.
And then after that, there will be games for Solanke and for Sturridge probably.
Let's play hostage to fortune then. Lay down some predictions for posterity. Guest producer, caretaker producer, if you will, Matt. Kick off the music and here come your quickfire predictions. Top four.
I'll go Man City first, Man United second, Tottenham third and Arsenal fourth.
Man City, Chelsea, Man United, Tottenham.
United, City, Tottenham, Chelsea.
I go United first,
yeah.
City second, Chelsea third and Arsenal fourth.
Right. Ian, bottom three.
Brighton, Huddersfield and Watford.
Ooh. Yeah.
Huddersfield, West Brom, Swansea.
Ooh, Swansea. All right, we'll talk more about why later. Kelly, you're now rethinking your position?
No, I'm just going to go with what Ian said because, okay, frankly, they mean nothing.
Jules?
I think Burnley are going to go down with Brighton and Huddersfield as well.
Okay, best signing of the summer?
Lukaku. I think he might be their Van Persie this season.
Right, that's a huge shout. First manager to get sacked, Ian?
Mark Hughes at Stoke.
James?
Tony Pulis.
That's a huge shout. Kelly?
Well, I don't know. Come back to me.
Julien?
God.
All right, then. Kelly, we're back to you.
Oh, God.
I tell you what.
I think
Conte?
I think there's...
Oh, yeah? Listen, I'm nothing if not consistent. 21st.
I think there's a huge problem with Rafael Benitez and Newcastle United at the moment. And I think he might not be sacked, he might walk away, but there would be something going on.
I add that caveat to the Conte as well, please.
Right.
I don't know. We don't know, James. We can't see into the future.
Right, you sound like somebody I used to know. Will anybody appoint David Moyes?
West Brom.
No way!
You're still listening to the Totally Football Show, which is a good thing. Let's talk about Europe. French league's already underway. Ligue 1 already underway. PSG have signed Neymar. That'll teach Barcelona to beat them 6-1, Ajors.
Big time.
If you had the choice between that match never happening and you not signing Neymar, or having that humiliating defeat and all of Europe laughing at you, but you then getting some measure of revenge in the transfer market, which do you pick?
The revenge in the transfer market.
Really?
Big time. Every day of the week.
Okay.
PSG, like the most spiteful club.
Why?
Well, for example, in addition to that, they apparently signed Neymar also because Barca made an approach for Marco Verratti. Verratti was like, ooh, I'd really like to go to Barcelona. Fantastic. Xavi and Iniesta are basically calling me every day. And then PSG like, no. And it's like the same like with Juventus, for example. They signed Kingsley Coman from PSG for free ages ago, and they've never forgiven them for it. So like last summer, yeah, they had a deal in place for Blaise Matuidi. PSG all transfer windows saying, yeah, you can have him for 30 million. It gets to like one of the final days and they go, actually, no. Like that.
They've had a great summer because they also got Dani Alves, didn't they?
Yeah.
They get Neymar, they get Dani Alves, they're going to get Coutinho and loads of other players as well. Plus, Monaco, who beat them to the title, have sold everybody apart from Mbappe and maybe they'll take him too.
Yeah.
And it's just been brilliant, hasn't it?
It's been an incredible summer, I have to say. Just on Neymar, one thing, let's not forget, it's Neymar and Neymar's people who called PSG. PSG started the summer thinking, not even thinking about Neymar at all, nowhere. The order was... Try to do Mbappé. If you can't do Mbappé, try to do Alexis Sanchez. If you can't do Alexis Sanchez, try to do Coutinho. If you can't do Coutinho, try to do Sergio Aguero. That was the idea.
If you could do all of them, why not?
No, they couldn't do all of them. But, you know, they wanted to aim high. But Neymar was never in the picture until they got a call from Neymar's people saying he wants to leave. Can you still welcome him? Because last summer... they were talking and PSG really thought they had him. At the time, his release clause was 190 million euros. And they thought they had him. And in the end, he changed his mind, stayed, signed a new deal. And that was it. And PSG felt really used by him and saying like, right, okay, you're not going to do that again to us. So they'd forgotten about him until he came towards them and not the other way around.
And why do you think he did that, Jules?
Money played a big part, obviously, when you can, you know, double your wages like the way he did. I think the fact that he spent 4 years there, he wanted something new. I think the fact that there was no Brazilian left in the Barcelona dressing room and all his mates, Dani Alves, Lucas Moura, they've been friends since they were 6 years old, played for Brazil under 17 and 19 and 20, all of that. Dani Alves, obviously his best friend, being there, I think that helped a lot. And also, I do believe that for Brazilians, individual trophies are huge and winning the Ballon d'Or means a lot to them and would mean a lot to Neymar. And Neymar, it was impossible for Neymar to win the Ballon d'Or at Barcelona. As simple as that. And anywhere else with good results and trophies and Champions League wins, etc., he would have been in contention for it. Mm. So I think all that together played a part.
They're going to win Ligue 1, yeah? Ligue 1, sorry.
I think so too. Yeah, I think so. I think they will. But it's just, when I was growing up, PSG were good and I was lucky. But then later, when I was a teenager, they were really bad. I mean, they were fighting against relegation. So
that's when Jules became an Arsenal fan.
Well, I could have been in any fans, to be fair. But to see Neymar now in Paris, it's just incredible, considering where the club was right 20 years ago.
And you say very, very high levels of excitement at Chez Laurent.
Oh, yeah. My kids.
Have you got little Neymar dolls? Because you had that Ibrahimovic doll.
Yes, not yet, but we've ordered the kits, obviously.
Obviously.
For my two boys, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He keeps telling us they're for the kids, but really they're for Jules.
No, I don't. I'm not so much of a kid wearer, to be fair.
No.
But I might do an exception for Neymar Jr.
Let's hope so, Jules.
But by the way, just to finish on Ligue 1.
I haven't finished. I've got loads more. Well, Don't worry, listeners. We're all about French football.
Because Nice signing Wesley Schneider, for example, I think he's an incredible signing for them.
5 years ago.
No. That's not true. He's 33, but we saw with, you know, Balotelli last season. Mm. Even those players who you think have passed their best or can still bring something in the right environment with the right manager and in a league that he's not one of the best in the world. I think Schneider can still shine.
It's going to be interesting to see Nice taking on Napoli in the Champions League preliminaries next week. Hugo Bostre has an interesting question. He says, can PSG finally win the Champions League this season?
I think they're still short of one or two players.
What kind of players?
Kylian Mbappe.
I think Kylian Mbappe, for example. I do think that...
Seriously, they've got Cavani and Julian Draxler and Di Maria and this Neymar.
Verratti.
I think...
Thiago Silva.
I think Thiago Silva is...
The goalkeeper's
not
be,
so good anymore. The keeper is not good enough, whether that's Trapp or Areola. I think Thiago Mota, even Rabiot, I'm not biggest fan. I think if you take Marquinhos, Verratti, no problem at all. Dani Alves, of course. I left back Kurzawa, I'm not convinced. And then you have, obviously, Neymar, Cavani. No problems there. Di Maria, probably no problem either. But I still think they're one or two short in key areas, like a goalkeeper and like maybe someone with Marquinhos at the back. But they have a good chance.
What does PSG have to do for Neymar to win the Ballon d'Or?
Win the Champions League.
So he's gone to PSG and he won't win the Ballon d'Or then?
Not this year.
PSG aren't going to win the Champions
League. Not this year, but you know, it might not stay the 5 years of his contract, but you know, you could hope he was at least 3 years. Over the 3 years, and I think that's really that's the objective. They said to him, in the next 3 years, we will win the Champions League because we will give you the team to win the Champions League. Let's dream, but they have a very good season next year. They win this season. They win the league. Maybe they're losing the final of the Champions League or the semi-final. He has a very good World Cup. Then suddenly the dynamic has changed and he can win the Ballon d'Or. If he'd stayed at Barcelona, even if they'd won the Champions League and he had done a very good World Cup, I'm still not sure that would have been enough. So I think...
Well, that's what it's all set up for, isn't it? With it being a World Cup year. PSG, their second shirt is yellow and green. It's like a Brazil team that has enrolled for club football.
The yellow shirt, just to finish on that, it's the away shirt. But yellow has nothing to do with our colours at all.
Right.
But a month ago, five weeks ago, when PSG released it, people were really, well, this is weird. And they said, it's simply a tribute to all the great Brazilian players that we had through the club's history. They had 33 before Neymar.
Like Ronaldinho, Rai.
Yeah, Rai, Valdo, Leonardo.
Oh, yeah.
And so people go, oh, yeah, that's cool. And little they knew that 5 weeks later they would sign the current Brazilian captain and maybe the best of all after Pelé. So.
They also pinched this guy from a recruitment department, I think, from a club in Gibraltar or Malta. And people were like, who the hell is this guy? And he's like a 32-year-old Brazilian. And it just turned out that he was part of the agency that Neymar had first been a part of.
Ooh.
When he was at Santos.
So they laid their groundwork.
They really did.
Louis Miles says, if it came down to a bare knuckle fight, who would win, Ronaldo or Messi? On a related note, who would win, Ronaldo or Messi?
If Ronaldo got the first punch in, he'd win.
Do you think?
But I think Messi would go longer than Ronaldo. I think
Messi
would
be all in. Ronaldo would be that's not what the I mean. Face,
I think,
not the face.
That's why I think if he got his first punch in, right, he'd win it, because I think he's strong. But I think Messi would go further.
I think we're calling this for Messi, yeah?
God, the reach on Ronaldo.
Sure. You'd pay to watch
that,
wouldn't
you? Yeah, the reach on Ronaldo, I agree with you.
Ronaldo's absolutely ripping. Tear Messi in half.
But I reckon he's more...
All the body shots in the world are not going to have any effect on Ronaldo with those abs, though, are they?
Just do one of those booming 1930s laughs. Like,
okay, I'm calling it for Messi. You're saying Ronaldo.
Yeah.
All right, well, there's only one way to find out, I think. French season's underway. Monaco got underway with a win. So that was Mbappe and who? The couple of kit boys?
No, Falcao started up front with Mbappe. You still have Thomas Lemar. You still have Fabinho. You still have Glick, for example. They still, you know, they lost, basically, Bernardo Silva, Bakayoko and Mendy.
Oh, okay.
So it's three that you lost.
Yeah.
Three very important ones, but it's only three if you want.
They signed some good players.
They sold some friends. Yeah, you know, I think Yuri Tillemans, who didn't start that game, Moutinho started. It's interesting. However, the signings they did in the last 2 days, Alan Saint-Maximin, the winger, tells you that maybe Lemar is going to go soon. The fact that they are close to signing Dolberg from Ajax tells you that maybe Mbappe is going to go soon as well.
But you think he's going to go?
Yeah, and Gianni...
And where's he going to go?
So PSG and Real Madrid, because he's a PSG kid, he's a Paris born and bred kid, and PSG was his team. Real Madrid, for other reasons, because since he was 11, they've kept inviting him to train with their team and to be there. I think they are his favourite clubs, more than City, more than Liverpool, more than Arsenal, more than anyone else. So I think if he was to go, it would be between PSG and Real Madrid.
Right. We're going to do a big Euro thing next week. But Oliver Donovan wants James, you to talk about AC Milan's amazing transfer window. How much did they spend? Or how much have they spent so far?
Oof, more than 200 million.
That's almost like Premier League money.
City have spent the most in the window, and they spent more, even though, for example, Paris Saint-Germain have paid 222 million for Neymar. But Milan have bought essentially an entire team, which they kind of needed to do.
And it's looking good so far, isn't it?
It looks very good. They're through to the Europa League playoff. So that's progress of sorts. But it was just incredible to see at San Siro, their first home game, first European game for 3.5 years, 65,000 fans showed up for it. And usually in August, Italians don't go to games because they're all at the beach and it's too hot and there's been this incredible heat wave there. But
and it was boiling there. It was about 40 degrees or something, wasn't it?
But I think the game-changing signing for them was to get Leonardo Bonucci from Juventus to take one of the iconic players from your rivals away from them and one of the best players in the world in his position. And then obviously...
reasonable price as well. It's not even if they had to spend 150
exactly
million.
And that was because I think he wanted to stay in Italy and go to Milan rather than go to City or Chelsea, where Juventus could have got a lot more money.
When you think they got him for more or less the same money that Chelsea paid for Rudiger, that's mind-boggling.
And also keeping the goalkeeper, who had Donnarumma, who was going to be the symbol of this team because he's a big Milan fan, came up through the youth ranks, obviously made his debut when he was 16. He had a big offer from PSG, €30 million a year. They were going to buy him a couple of nice apartment blocks in Paris, have a chauffeur driven everywhere.
Blocks. Not just apartments, but blocks.
So that's because they can
do
that.
A block of apartments.
Yeah, well,
your cats.
He's got a big family from Naples, so bring them all over.
Aaron Spelling in his house that he had with his wife, just as an aside.
Tory's father.
Yeah, they had and the developer of like Dynasty and
things
and Dallas and whatever. They had a gift wrapping room in their house.
A room for gift wrapping.
Yeah,
that's brilliant.
Yeah, no, it's not a metaphor. It was actually just a room for gift wrapping.
Wow, so that's
was it like a room? It was set up with already wrapping paper and sellotape.
I never went
like
in.
Oh right,
but that's essentially what
when they divorced. When they divorced, then what happened to all of that?
They split it right down the middle. Scissors, James.
All right.
Yeah, it's hard to do that, but it makes a lovely noise.
We would talk, as I say, more about Europe, Bayern Munich, that kind of thing. They've just won their Super Cup against Borussia Dortmund. Extraordinary to see them wake up after that amazing pre-season they had, where they lost 3-0 to Liverpool, they lost 2-0 to Napoli, they lost 2-0 to Inter, they lost 4-0 to Milan as well. Yeah. What's been going on there?
They lost to Arsenal on penalties.
Oh, of course.
On penalties.
We'll ask Rafa next week all about them and Hoffenheim and all that kind of thing. After this little interlude, we'll be heading back to the Premier League. Right. There's 14 Premier League clubs out there that we haven't talked about yet. Who are you expecting to surprise, oxymoronic though that sounds, from that lot? Ian, you're big on Everton. Lots of people are after their...
Well, I was bigger on Everton at the beginning of the transfer window. Buying Rooney...
Welcome back, by the way, because you didn't say a single word in the last...
I was just listening. It was good stuff.
Right.
It bodes well.
Okay.
Don't worry, I only contributed on gift wrapping.
I was happier with Everton at the start of the transfer window. The Wayne Rooney thing just smacks of sentimentality, and I've got a horrible feeling Koeman is going to spend about 6 months this season doing exactly what Mourinho did last season, just shuffling the pack to try and find a way to make it work before he concludes, as Mourinho did, that it's not going to work. He's done. He's done. Everywhere else, they signed really, really well. If they gel quickly, they could do very, very well. I think seventh is probably the safest bet there. But for...
This is why they spent all that money to get better.
Yeah, to get in exactly the same place. Yeah.
Well, last season they were, 8 points behind United and 15 ahead of Saints. So, I mean, it really is a league of their own.
Yeah, very much so. Their own little mini-league. But they have players for the future as well. There's Michael Keane, there's Jordan Pickford, right. There's Sandro. They have players who will develop. And if this is another transitional season, I think that's fine.
Five of the England under-20 side that did so brilliantly in the
Much hope they get some game time.
And okay. Not, but no Lukaku?
No, but Sandro looks like fun.
Yeah.
They need maybe a goal scorer. I think Sandro is the type of guy who will create chances, not take them, because I don't think he's a pure finisher.
I think Giroud would be great. Because he could tie it.
Is that going to happen? Was there some talk of that?
Well, there was some talk about it, and he'd tie it all together quite nicely at the top.
Yeah, I mean, I think they really want him.
Mm.
He,
come on, Jules.
No, he wants to stay at Arsenal, but he doesn't want another season where he only starts 17 games. So there's a World Cup at the end of the year, like we said, at the end of the season. So I think he's just thinking about it right now. I saw him after the game on Sunday. He said, I'm here, I'm happy here, I'm going to stay here. That doesn't mean he's not going to change towards the end, but I think he's tempted to go, but he would like to stay because he loves Arsenal as well. It's a tricky situation for him, I give him that, because Arsenal are a good club to be at, but he wants to play, and he feels that, obviously, like I said, he's the first choice, so he will be left behind a bit like he was last season, and that's not what he wants, so it's a tricky one.
He could come to some sort of arrangement, because he's playing behind the player he starts in front. For his country, he more or less starts ahead of Giroud.
Yeah, but it's a different. Yeah, it's a different formation. It's a different, it's a different dynamic. He starts for France for a reason, because Antoine Griezmann is best with him in that formation. If they were playing another formation, he wouldn't start. He's only starting because of that. And
he's handsome.
Yeah, he's and his hair are great.
Neil C says, can you talk in detail about the newly promoted teams and their chances for the season? You betcha, Neil C. You can, can't you, Ian? Because you reckon that Newcastle are going to be the surprise of this campaign. Why, Ian? Why?
let's just say, of all the 20 predictions I made, that's the one I looked at the next day and went,
Chelsea is fifth.
Yeah, no, I'm quite happy with Chelsea as fifth. You know, the fractures between Benitez and Ashley are really starting to concern me. However, in my defence and their defence, because it'll be marshalled by Benitez, 46 points was enough to come ninth last season. So it's not a huge jump. They were already a Premier League team when they went down. They were the best team in the league by miles last season. I don't think it takes a Herculean effort to finish ninth with a team like Newcastle.
Right.
But I will say this, and 2 days after this, Benitez will walk out and a half. So, as always, Mike Ashley is their biggest enemy.
Crikey. What do you make of Brighton then? What do you make of their chances?
Well, as a Southend fan, I'm contractually obliged not to say anything nice about them because we have a deep and bitter peer pressure related rivalry.
You can't say anything horrible about Chris Hughton or anything to do with a Chris Hughton.
Chris Hughton's such a lovely, lovely man. I'm just not sure there's enough there. Lewis Dunk's very good. Anthony Knockhart, obviously, is excellent. But it's a brand new goalkeeper. He's got to settle, and it's. Yeah, I think they're probably going to go. Huddersfield, I think, will win on the first day of the season.
Okay, who they got?
I think they could be a surprise. I can't quite see them doing enough to stay up.
No, that's
but
exactly it.
So there's going to be the odd game where they're just going to blow someone away or get a real shock result. They just have this. I mean, nobody expected them to get into the playoffs. Nobody expected them when they were in the playoffs to actually, because for a while it looked like they might even qualify automatically, but then they fell away, and it was like, right, they're in the playoffs, but they're the team that are on the sort of downward trend. Then they get through, win the playoff final, and they're buoyant. They're a really lively, exciting team to watch. And it's whether they get the time and the room to do that in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, but the first game of the season, because they're this high intensity, high press, getting people's faces.
Wagner was Klopp's best man, so that is a very similar style.
But they're up against Crystal Palace, who are going to be changing their style from the kind of defensive counter-attack kind of formation into something a little bit more entertaining. Yeah, lots of people taking a touch on the ball while Huddersfield clatter into them. I think that's a Huddersfield win. But I do think they'll be the team like Blackpool, like Hull. If for some reason, the least fashionable team always makes a great start, almost as if footballers are habitually complacent and arrogant.
Well, did Huddersfield finish last season with a negative goal difference?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
And which is something that, obviously, when you go up, you have to address. You can't. It's one thing to.
It's that kind of high risk football.
Yes,
that is what
true.
That is what they play. But that's why I think it won't necessarily work over a season.
Brighton's chances against City in their opener?
Zero.
Really?
Yeah, they'll get battered.
Okay. Who are the other surprises out there? Did somebody say Bournemouth? You did, didn't
yes,
you, Julian?
Yes, I did, yeah. I mean, they were surprised last season to finish ninth, albeit in a very low amount of points, like Ian said. But still, ninth for Bournemouth, I think, is fantastic. And I think they can do that again. I don't think they can break into the top eight, but I think Begovic, Aki, Jermaine Defoe, I think he's
Jermaine Defoe,
yeah. I think he's good signing.
How many goals is he worth?
I think he's worth a lot. I think him and Josh King can work really well together up front.
Yeah,
if Josh King stays, which I hope for Bournemouth he does, because I think he's a very, very good talent. If they can keep hold of him and Defoe, I just think, and I think Eddie Howe is such a good manager. I've really enjoyed watching them last season because they, you know, they were opened at the back too often, but also scoring well. I think there'd be another, surprise us and do very well this season.
I think Howe's a very good manager because you saw last January they lost Aki just as they were finding that kind of defensive stability and it kind of got away from them a little bit. And then they stabilised again in the summer. Now they've got Aki back. They've upgraded it in goal. Probably going to get more goals as well with Defoe. I know people are a little bit down on the fact that he's 34, but he always scores goals in the league.
How old's Ibrahimovic?
Well, exactly.
Yeah. How do you feel about De Boer after his miserable time at Inter? How's he going to get on at Selhurst Park?
I'm not too sure. I mean, he's got great pedigree. Look, to win four league titles in Holland at a time when Ajax had.
And when was the last time somebody did well in Holland and didn't do well in the Premier League?
True. But I think he would be kind of scarred by that experience. He says he's learned a lot from that experience at Inter. Mm. And to be honest, he did only come in with 12 days of pre-season. And he didn't bring any players that he wanted in. So it was very much someone else's team. So I don't know whether he can actually transform this team from the one that stayed up under Pulis and Allardyce. Pardew tried to take it into a different places and wasn't entirely successful at all, really. Whether they can do that, I'm not sure.
It's going to be a leap of faith there, and it's almost certainly going to be a season where the second half is significantly better than the first as they all try to adjust.
As they bring in the new manager.
I'm more confident about Marco Silva at Watford.
Right.
I think they will, relatively speaking, they will probably climb furthest. Well, also because they were the
biggest improvement from last season.
Yeah, because they were bottom of the teams that stayed up.
What about West Ham? can anyone make a case for them?
Chicharito.
With Chicharito, they've now got arguably the two finest, if fit, the two finest and most creative headers of the ball in world football on their books. Yeah. The other fellow, Andy Carroll, I don't know if you remember, ask your folks. Big fellow. Still there. Mm. West Ham? No. Joe Hart?
They've also got Marko Arnautović. And
if
you can unlock Marko Arnautović and get the consistency that I don't think Stoke ever quite got, he's an outstanding footballer. The problem is that's West Ham all over, isn't it?
Do you know the thing, as we're talking about where everybody's going to, what they're going to do this season, I don't think positionally there's going to be a massive amount of change in the Premier League table. So I think what we're, I mean, obviously Crystal Palace is probably going to be a different style of play. But the same sort of finish to the season. I just can't see Everton, even though they spent really well, it will be getting a load of those new signings to gel together. And as you said, Koeman will be shuffling them throughout the season. So it won't be this season necessarily that you see the effects of those. So they probably will finish just pretty much in that sort of band where they were. So the more you talk about teams, the more you think, you know, plus ça change, all that.
Right. Except at the top, which I guess is why everyone always talks about them.
Well, yeah, but it's the same band of teams that are going to be in there. It's just in what order.
I'm just going to romp through the other teams that we haven't mentioned yet. And if you want to throw anything in, Julien, just do. Burnley?
Need to replace Keane at the back. They still haven't done it. And that could be a huge problem if they don't find the right player.
I think they might have to replace Sean Dyche soon as well, because he's going to be surely coming to the point where he thinks he could manage at a higher level. He could manage at a higher level. I think there'll be a lot of medium-sized jobs going available in about, well, October 21st, maybe.
22nd. Leicester, are they going to hang on to Mahrez? Iheanacho's gone there.
I like the fact that they signed Iheanacho. I think that looks good. But how he's going to play when, you know, they've got Vardy, Okazaki, Slimani, Musa,
Gray.
What's going to happen with Mahrez? Is he going to go to Roma?
Well, he wants to talk to Roma, doesn't he? But the Leicester are unwilling to allow them to talk to him until they meet an asking price, which is, I think, 5 million more than Roma are prepared to pay.
But why Roma? I mean, Mahrez
have
is
you been there?
Only... what did you say?
I just said, have you been there? It's a lovely
town. Roma's beautiful. But, I don't mean why would he want to go to Roma. I mean, why is there not... If he's available and wants to move away, why Roma? Sometimes if a player that you bring in as a bargain is a bargain for a reason.
Mm.
You know, you may have a fantastic season, but they have a flaw in the diamond that sometimes doesn't cause a crack.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe you just get one. Maybe he is just a one good season player.
Yeah, I think that's
maybe that's what
risk.
People have looked at, and they look at his reaction last season to not being allowed to leave. I'm not going to touch someone with that attitude. Yeah. Maybe.
Okay.
Poor old Claudio Ranieri, by the way, getting whooped the other day
by Bielsa
against Lille, yeah.
Okay, so Bielsa now in charge of Lille, and what was the scoreline there?
3-0. But the best moment of it, apart from the fact that Bielsa and Lille looked really good and interesting, is before the game when they met in the tunnel, the two managers, and they said hello to each other, and Ranieri says, "Oh, hello, Marcelo. I've got so much respect for you." And Bielsa said to him, "You're the best of all of us, and we all have so much respect for you." And I thought that was just lovely. Oh. One is 65, one is 62. They never met before. They met, and they just are full of respect for each other. I think that was lovely. I almost cried.
It's not true, though, is it? Man, Ranieri's not the best of all managers.
No.
But not for us. Maybe other managers find him...
For guys who always
better
finish
than
second, like Bielsa, I suppose, or, you know,
maybe,
his team's
maybe.
Burnt out.
No, but Pep says that Bielsa is the best, and he's probably the only one to think that. So I think managers maybe they might base themselves on other things than us, and maybe see different things in other managers than we don't see or we don't know, or things like that.
As I say, rattling through the other teams in the Premier League. Leicester, tick. What are their chances of giving Arsenal their usual rotten start to the season on Friday night? Kelly, you love predictions. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll go for a draw.
All right.
Just to make you happy. And because I know it's meaningless.
Southampton are still in the Premier League. Eighth last time around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not saying they're still in, you know, that they should have gone down or anything. I'm just saying another Premier League team is Southampton.
Signing, a young Polish defender.
So okay.
Almost certainly a £40 million Liverpool signing in about 18 months.
Mario Lemina is coming, though, no? From Juventus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's big, isn't it?
Yeah, it's big.
And if you could have a season ticket to one team between West Brom and Stoke, which would you pick?
Stoke.
Would you? Why?
The atmosphere
closer to the motorway?
They're both absolutely freezing.
The atmosphere is better at Stoke, though.
Right. But the football's going to be even duller, isn't it, this time around? They've sold off all the people who... They had 41 goals last time.
At least at Stoke, you see Shaqiri, and Shaqiri is capable on he's not capable of consistency, but he's capable of the best inconsistency ever, which now and again he's going to score a screamer and a fantastic, he's going to do something great. At West Brom, you've got no one who can do that.
No one.
Yeah, and to be honest, Stoke have taken Darren Fletcher away from West Brom, so there's that.
Jonathan Stoke also have DJ Crouchy.
DJ Crouch?
Yeah, have you not seen Peter Crouch, now Radio DJ, on X, Radio X? Has anyone listened? No one's listened to his show.
No, have you?
No. I wasn't aware of this until I read it in a previous
one. Like
summer.
A permanent slot?
No, I think it was a guest thing over the summer. Yeah. But maybe that's the future for him, because obviously his playing time is increasingly limited these days.
Well, it depends on which playing time you're referring to.
Oh, yeah, that's so good. Will he have a good record? I don't know. We're talking about his DJing career. All that.
Can I just say, in defence of West Brom and Tony Pulis, but is that they do well. They stay in the Premier League. They're comfortably still in the Premier League. Mm. They do it a certain way. Mm. And it might be that West Brom fans want a bit more. They want a bit more excitement. They want a bit more flair. But sometimes you just have to accept where you are. Yeah. And you have to say, do you know what? It would be great. Maybe they want to ban what?
No, go on. No, go on.
Don't laugh at me and point
I'm
at everyone
laughing.
Else.
Really?
And
then, saying about,
this is like Mean Girls.
Right.
Should accept where they are.
You're not going to bring that up.
Don't aim for the stars.
The grass isn't always greener.
It's not about the grass being greener.
No.
Sometimes you just have to accept you're a journeyman.
I used to have hair, and I loved my hair, but it got thinner every year and just wasn't looking as good. So one day I just had to get rid of it all. And try and grow some new hair in another place. Right. There's not a day that goes by that I don't think back to that hair that I lost and nostalgically and envy the lucky so-and-sos who still have that hair. It doesn't mean anything. I'm not making any points. Just how it is. Swansea.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a good scent.
If he goes to Everton, then Abraham. They could have a
Why is everyone so excited about Tammy Abraham?
Because he was brilliant at Bristol City. Fantastic.
How brilliant, Kelly.
Fantastic. He's Premier
League
scored goals for fun. He was out injured for a little while. They struggled without him. Yeah. They won. City. I mean, they won on the opening day of the season. They may well have found, but it was against Barnsley who were going to struggle this season. They've sold all their best players. But I think people are excited about Tammy Abraham because he looks clever. He looks quick. He can finish. It's exciting.
He's also got a chance to start because Fernando Llorente added himself to comedy injuries by breaking his arm, falling off a bike on holiday.
Oh, off a bicycle?
Yes.
All right. So, and you laughed at that?
Well, it's just the kind of person I am. I can't fight it anymore.
All right then. Hey, Premier League tick. One more little break and then we'll be back with some other important things. Kelly, how disappointed were you with England's performance just about a week ago in the Euro Women's European Championship?
Oh, we're asking the woman
Holland.
About the women's football. This isn't tokenism.
Kind of is, though, isn't it? But to be fair,
on,
I asked Jules about Ligue 1.
You ask him about the French.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Ask the lady about the lady.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
It's for everyone, James. Not just for
ladies.
Yeah.
Jules, what did you... No, because
I've watched it, yeah.
England did better than France, obviously.
Obviously.
France was so poor.
It was a terrible... England were that terrible was, in the semi-final.
Yeah. And I think the pressure got to them maybe a bit, which...
I think they ran out of ideas as well, didn't they?
Yeah, probably too.
Still, I mean...
But Holland played well, in fairness. They took that game, they approached that game very in a much better way than England. I thought they were far more positive.
And they went on to win it. So, you know, getting knocked out by the eventual winners.
That's true.
Yeah, winning at the start. So 4-2 Sunday over Denmark and wonderful celebrations in Utrecht.
Yes.
Afterwards, they've ended Germany's 22-year monopoly of the European crown in women's football.
But the thing
what
is,
can
you feel for?
I can tell you also that 8 out of 10 people in the Netherlands watched that final.
Yeah.
That's a huge
great.
Number. I mean, you and I work in television, Kelly.
Yes.
Those numbers, we'd kill for them.
Yes.
I literally
and frequently
would
have. We just don't talk about it.
You feel for Denmark, though, who had lost the previous 6 semi-finals. Oh. They won one and then they get battered in the final.
Right.
There was always also that fantastic story about the Denmark player whose father was killed by the Taliban.
Oh, yeah. So.
And she was a refugee, ended up in Denmark, started playing football, now plays football for Denmark and captained. I think she captained, sure she captained. Yeah, she captained them. In the European Championship final against Holland.
Brilliant.
Netherlands.
All right, then. But anyway, a hugely successful tournament. Mm. Ian.
Hello.
That was smooth, wasn't it? Football League got underway this weekend. Caretaker producer Matt doesn't say we have much time left on the clock. What have you got?
Well, let's just focus on the only story in town. They were tipped as favourites to win the league, but Blackburn Rovers had no answer to Southend United at Roots Auger.
Right.
Yeah, it's always too early to read much into the Championship. Newcastle lost their first two games last season, so you don't want to jump to any conclusions. However, I was actually really impressed with Aston Villa.
Okay.
They dropped 2 points against Hull, who made a stunning recovery in the second half because they were barely in it in the first half. But what was really interesting about Villa wasn't so much John Terry being good, which he was, but it was the effect he appears to have had on the players around him, because suddenly Alan Hutton looked like the Alan Hutton who was impressing for Scotland about 9 or 10 years ago. Bakuna was just bursting through the midfield like a young Steven Gerrard, just tearing it up.
First half.
Yes,
yeah,
first half.
Yeah, there was, yeah. Yeah.
And Gabby Agbonlahor.
On the left.
Actually, yes, actually, but showing willing. And,
yes.
And running.
Yes.
So you do wonder how much of an effect Terry's had in there. As Kelly says, the second half was a very different story.
Well, a stirring comeback from Hull. Leonid Slutsky, how's he adapting to his life there?
Well, since I had lunch with him, James, yes. He hasn't picked up the phone and called me or texted me. So I feel like a jilted lover. You know,
Previously, on the bench with Rushy, he's always been slumped there.
He turns out
on
very well.
It was all over.
His pre-match interview, he could not stop smiling. Like, how are you pleased to be? Yes, I'm very pleased to be here. I can't wait to see what they say.
I can't believe.
Absolutely beaming. Afterwards, he was completely thrilled with the fact they got a point, that they'd come back from a goal down. I've never seen a man so animated and so clearly delighted.
I think, do you remember Conte this time last year? He always was smiling. Now he doesn't smile so much.
Yeah.
I think it's because they've had the same English teacher.
Oh,
and this is how they've been taught to.
Have they genuinely had the same English teacher?
Yeah.
Because that then?
Roman Abramovich put him up for 6 months in a hotel outside of Stamford Bridge.
Right.
And basically said, you have to learn English. And he's learned English very well. Yeah, speaks brilliantly. He can carry a good anecdote, make jokes.
If only Claude Puel had had that English teacher.
And it's based in Southampton,
so
apparently.
I was told that in Russia, if you smile too much, people think you're stupid. Ah. So I don't know, maybe Leonid Slutsky's wanted to smile all his life and now he's left. I was told about this.
Who told you that, Kelly?
Someone who was over recceing in Moscow ahead of the World Cup.
Right.
And said that she came and she was told, you're a bit smiley, just dial that down a little bit because otherwise people will assume that you're really thick.
Wow.
I heard that.
Yeah,
it might be completely wrong. It might be false information. I haven't heard it from a Russian.
Right, okay. League One, League Two, really briefly, Ian?
I think I've done League One.
Yeah.
comprehensive.
Yeah, League Two, Luton did very well.
Oh, Portsmouth, you didn't mention them,
Yes.
Back from collecting money in buckets.
Mr. Disney, now.
Yeah, that's
now
really exciting.
That's great news for them. I think they'll do very well.
And Luton, who came back from a goal down against Yeovil, beat them 8-2.
Yes, almost as if they're slightly frustrated about missing out on promotion last time. I think they'll probably be all right this time.
Right, I went to Gander Green Lane.
Did you?
For some non-league football. I saw Sutton United. What was the key fixture, really, of the opening weekend in the National League? Because they took on Leighton Orient, who'd dropped out of the Football League. It was their first ever taste of non-league football. And there was, you know, a bit of a parallel, if you like, with the presenter of the show. anyway, I acquitted myself rather better than they did because they lost 2-0.
And how did
Sutton
you acquit yourself
tasty.
Well? What did you do?
I think I did all right. I mean, it's football, isn't it?
Definitely football.
Yeah, and Sutton clearly played football. Leighton would try to. I don't want to get too much into depth because I know caretaker Matt's got to get on to another high profile gig. But Leighton were trying to play football, a little bit too much football, if you like. Mm. But Sutton knew what they were doing, did it really well, got in tight, hassled them, pressured them, and then made great use of every ball that they won back. And a 2-0 win, although there was a shout for a Leighton penalty. But anyway, great start for Sutton. Next weekend, I'll be at Maidenhead. Do come and join me. I think on Hartlepool, who are also just down from. The Football League. Sorry, Julian, did you want to say something?
No, I just thought your shirt at that game was open like good old David Ginola.
Yeah, I've been on holiday.
I've
got a tan.
You.
To the day.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. You watched?
Yes.
All right, super. Well, many thanks then to Julian, to Kelly, to James, to Ian, to caretaker producer Matt, and to you especially, listener. It's so special that you joined us on this inaugural show. Do remember to rate us and review us and share and indeed subscribe where that's technically possible. Ian, a quick reminder of where people can comment on this show.
Well, first of all, there's the Twitter feed,
at The Totally Show. And very, very soon we'll have a website, thetotallyfootballshow.com. Right. And we'll be on iTunes as soon as I've got off the phone and screamed abuse at them.
All right. Many, many thanks in the meantime to Audio Boom and to Maple Street Studios. We'll see you next Monday on The Totally Football Show.